Join the Walter M. Sterling Club.
All right. Have all the grown-ups gone to bed now? That's great. It means that I can tell you my stories, and you can tell me yours. I've turned off the dryer in the laundry room. I am broadcasting from my basement laundry room. That's the degree of investment that Westwood One has made into this show.
Start with a clean dry brush and clean white. And go back to the slide area and begin blending outward.
About twice a year, I actually listen to public radio. And to me, public radio sounds like this.
I'm Rachel Goldstein Shabazz. This is the usual edition from public radio. First, obscure jazz composed by the unheard-of jazz stylings of Jerry De Carano. This edition focuses on public radio blessed vacation spots, places our listeners enjoy that are under left-wing control. First, we visited the uninhabited Zulu Bird Island. The island has started melting because of climate change brought on by divorcee Trump. Next, we visit the Kingdom of Borneo. Nancy Pelosi goes here because it's the only place where Ivanka Trump clothing is unavailable. Here's the sound from Speaker Pelosi's patio in Borneo. We quietly asked Speaker Pelosi her feelings on the places that game show host Trump chooses for vacation.
This is Armageddon.
Jim Kelly, winging a prayer, is our correspondent on the vacation retreat of the Isle of Wight, reviewing the beaches that witnessed World War II, the last good war, a war run by Democrat Franklin Delano Roosevelt.
I am on the Isle of Wight. Listen to the sound of the natural marshland giving way to the tides of history.
We mourn the passing of Aretha Franklin at the usual edition with this rendition of an old song by Ella Fitzgerald.
In a mountain greenery where God paints the scenery just to crazy people.
And then I said to Jerry De Carano, the obscure jazz producer, writer, I said, Jerry, you know what public radio is going to do? They're going to celebrate Aretha Franklin by not playing her singing. And then Jerry gets in touch with me a couple hours later, and Jerry De Carano, who's on our news line right now, has this report as to actually what public radio did to salute Aretha Franklin's death.
Well, good evening. I made the terrible sacrifice of deliberately listening to public radio to see how they would handle it. And I actually heard a report from PRI, Public Radio International, and the reporter was a woman who sounded as if she was about maybe 22 years old. So when Aretha Franklin was out there cutting hit records, this woman, this reporter, was probably minus 30 years old. So the first thing I thought to myself was, well, couldn't they have found a reporter who was actually alive when Aretha was cutting hit records? But anyway, they started with a couple of bars of I Say a Little Prayer. And I thought, this is great. That is my favorite Aretha Franklin song. And so I'm settling in thinking, I'm going to hear a good piece of this song. Well, as soon as they started it, it was over because they had to cut away for an interview, and you know what that interview was going to be like. It was going to be somebody somewhere. How did Aretha influence you? What did you think of her music? That sort of thing. Where did they go? Whom did they interview? They found a guy in Scotland. No, they didn't go to Detroit. They didn't go to Los Angeles or New York. No, they had to interview a guy from Scotland who was touring there and is actually from South Africa. So all of a sudden, I'm saying, wait a minute, I want to hear some of Aretha's music, and why do I have to listen to this guy from Scotland? And they were asking all the usual questions, and he really had very little to say. He said, well, my mother really loved Aretha's music, and we used to listen to it on Sunday morning. And then the woman said, well, what did you think of her music? And what did your mother think of her music? And the guy said, well, it was moving. That was about all he could say. And then the next thing was, did you ever meet Aretha Franklin? Now, wouldn't you think, Walter, it would be a great idea if maybe they had Aretha's choir mate, or Aretha's schoolmate, or Aretha's best friend. No, they have to have this virtual stranger who said, well, yes, I met Aretha Franklin once, very briefly, because we were performing together on the same bill. So it was probably a, hi, it's nice to meet you. Well, it's nice to meet you. It was probably a five-second conversation.
I would guess that Aretha had absolutely no memory of this conversation. Jerry DiCarano, this is very profound, and it's the sort of nonsense that we hear all the time whenever we have to deal with public radio. Now, the other thing that bothers me about public radio, and thank you, Jerry DiCarano, thank you. The other thing that annoys me about public radio is the bizarre use of language. They have this very bizarre use of language. They had a cardiologist on. I can't get over this clip. This is the most amazing clip I've ever heard. They had a cardiologist on. They said to the cardiologist, if we increase taxes on junk food, if we increase taxes on food that makes you fat, wouldn't that be a good thing, or would people object too much to the tax? They're trying to manipulate public behavior by taxing junk food as a way to make America healthy. And I'm listening, I'm going, we don't need another tax. This is what the cardiologist on public radio said.
Let's get rid of the word tax. This really is a phenomenon we know as behavioral economics, using small incentives or disincentives to modify behavior. If we think of this, Anthony, as an investment in our future that allows our children to do better in school, that lowers our health care costs, that increases our longevity with a better quality of life, it's no longer a tax, Anthony. It's an investment.
It's a blessing. It's a blessing.
Oh
my gosh. Hey, you know what? We've been doing this show on Westwood One on the network now on giant radio stations like WMAL and WLS. We've been doing this for 1 year.
Walter Sterling, congratulations from all of us in One Direction. You're as hot as we are. Sterling on Sunday.
We have so much to do tonight. We have a tremendous amount to do tonight. Coming up, we have Jennifer Romulini. Maybe you've worked for a long time behind a desk as a waitress, doing something that you're like, that isn't really what I was meant to do, but I don't fit in. I don't know how to fit in. Jennifer Romulini was married for a long time to the wrong guy, and she was a waitress for a long time because she felt that she was a misfit. She didn't know how to fit in. Then she broke out of it, and what happened in her brain to break out of it is something that you and I both can use. It'll be pretty valuable. Plus, we have national weather. There are hurricanes brewing. We'll have national weather for you. A great many things coming up. Plus, you and I will have a secret message that you can only decode with your Midnight Misfit membership card. Have you gotten it yet? It's free. All you have to do is go to Walter M. Sterling, where you can hear any of our shows on demand at any time. Any of our shows on demand at any time at waltermsterling.com. Plus, if you click Midnight Misfits, right now, for free, you can download and print out your membership card, which has the decipher code, and you will find out the secret message. We're going to have a deep and detailed analysis of the relationship between Ashley Benson and Cara Delevingne. Look it up. Who is that? Look it up. And then we have the final episode of Asbestos Falls. While other talk shows are in repeats tonight, we create original dramas, and for weeks, for 12 weeks, actually, we have presented an original drama created by at Kansas State University at their radio station in Manhattan, Kansas. This is brilliant stuff and really sick. Tonight's the final episode. Bonus, we're going to interview the freaks that make Asbestos Falls. And it turns out it's not quite as fictional as you and I had thought. It's quite a lot going on tonight. Plus, we have Randy West, who has great Hollywood gossip, stunning Hollywood gossip. Randy West has the best stories. I don't like these Entertainment Tonight pieces where everybody's happy. Randy West is going to present to us a piece of gossip that you just won't believe. It'll be fantastic. And we have Florida stories. Florida stories. I realized that when I put together this show, so much of the wacky news that I'm attracted to comes out of the state of Florida. I thought, let's make this efficient and get a specific Florida reporter, and that's James Parker. James Parker will have a Florida report for you. And the number one movie this weekend is one you got to go see. It's Filthy Rich Asians. It is hysterical, and it stars the mom from Fresh Off the Boat. She is the greatest actress. Jeanette McCurdy and Constance Wu are the greatest comic actresses of our time. She is so funny in this movie and so great in this movie. You're going to love it. All right, I'm Walter M. Sterling. This is Sterling on Sunday. And this was kind of a Los Angeles day. Have you ever been in Los Angeles? Sure you have. And if you haven't, let me explain Los Angeles, because to me, it's the most American city. It is the greatest American city because it could not happen anyplace else. New York, New Orleans, maybe Chicago, many of the big cities could happen someplace else, but only Los Angeles could happen in America. Los Angeles is 78 degrees all year. It's 55 in the morning, clouds burning off at the beaches, high of 78, 93 KHJ. It's always 78 degrees. And then for 2 weeks a year, they get rain, and it's banner headlines. Oh, my gosh, it rained today. What are we going to do? Oh, no. When I go to Los Angeles, I go to a hotel in West Hollywood. Now, normally I'm like a Marriott, Four Seasons kind of guy when I can afford it. But when I go to West Hollywood, I go to the Standard Hotel. I go to the Hotel Standard, which looks like a motel from the 1950s. It's been retro-designed to a hotel in the 1950s. It has blue AstroTurf carpet. It has orange shag carpet on the walls. It's all done in blonde wood. It's designed to look like a combination of a motel on the side of the road in the 50s and a rec room in the 70s in the suburbs. It's amazing. And for years, I used to get a massage. I'd get a back massage. You know, when I had money before I did a radio show, I would get a masseuse once a week, maybe once a month. And I had a little knot in my shoulder blade that I'd get pounded out. And I had tension in my lower back that I'd get massaged out. And it's been years since I've been able to afford that. You know what? My back doesn't hurt anymore. But you've heard about happy endings. One time I'm at the Hotel Standard in Los Angeles. And I one of the buttons on the phone, room service, housekeeping, massage. And I push the button that says massage. And they say, yes, Mr. Sterling, you want a massage? I said, yes. When would you like it? Well, soon. Now it's like 4:30 in the afternoon. 4:30 in the afternoon every day in Los Angeles is like Saturday. Why? Because everybody's bosses in New York, they've gone home. And they said, do you want a man or a woman? I said, I'd like a man. I always ordered a man for a massage because I needed somebody who could really pound my back to that knot under my shoulder to release that tension. Guy comes up to my room. Hotel Standard, Los Angeles, 4:30 in the afternoon. I am in heaven. My boss has gone home. It's 4:30. It's 78. And the smell of Los Angeles comes alive at that time. The rhododendron, the roses. It's an incredible aroma. It's a remarkable city. Guy comes to my door. And he looks like the trainer at a good gym. He's a handsome guy. He comes in. He says, lie on the bed. I lie on the bed. He goes to the bathroom. Okay, he does whatever masseuses do. And then he says, are you ready? I say, yeah, I'm ready. And he comes out. And I'm on the phone doing very important Walter Sterling things, changing lives, managing radio stations, running careers. And I'm on the phone, very intense. And I see out of the corner of my eye that this masseuse who has come to my hotel room is only wearing a jock strap. He's only wearing a jock strap. What happened next, I can't tell you on the air. But you can find out on my podcast that I've made for you where I can say anything, where anything goes. The name of the podcast is Midnight Misfits. Get it from iTunes, SoundCloud, TuneIn, iHeart, Midnight Misfits. Get the podcast. the end of the story is, I can't say it on the air. I'm Walter M. Sterling. This is Sterling on Sunday.
How are you doing, Mr. Sterling?
Excited to speak to you. You bet.
Okay. Well, we were very disappointed. Billy just told me that he got a call from you. He just checked his voicemail. He's horrible at that. And he said, listen to this message.
What I think's great, Amanda, is that when you call me and when Billy calls me, you both call to complain about the other. And I appreciate that. What Amanda's talking about is our new service, the Sterling Express, which means that when you call in, if you want, I will call you during the week. I will call you during the week. We'll have a conversation. This gets me off my wife's back because she's always complaining I'm doing my show in the house. And I'm like, yes, but I'm not on 5 days a week. And therefore, I have to do my show in the house. She says, do it on the air. All right, fine. So I will call you during the week and share what's ever annoying me, and you can share what's annoying you. That's the Sterling Express. There you go. 888-688-WALT. Here is national weather.
And it's Chief Meteorologist John Weatherby, Sterling on Sunday. Hi, everyone. Let's check our weather for this evening. Things look pretty quiet in most places, and let's get you ready for the work week ahead. First of all, we've got some severe weather across the Ozarks in the Branson area, south central Missouri, north central Arkansas. Heavier showers and thunderstorms through Joplin, now working their way right along the state line. I got a couple of warnings there. They will diminish over the next several hours. The other story tonight is the air quality from all the wildfires out west have extended air quality alerts. Oregon, Washington, almost all of the state of Montana, down into portions of Idaho, and that looks like it's going to be extended even farther to the west or to the east over there. So we've got smoke all the way from the Pacific Ocean to the Atlantic Ocean from those incredible wildfires, and there's no relief in sight. We have hurricanes to talk about, too. Another hurricane is going to go right under Hawaii. Hurricane Lane, a major hurricane, will be passing by. The remnants of Ernesto is actually headed toward Ireland. We've also got some severe thunderstorms for your Monday weather from the upper Midwest, Iowa, portions of Illinois, including Chicago, down the Mississippi Valley. Heads up for those storms, which will push off to the north and east, but will also herald some drier weather and cooler temperatures across the upper Midwest later in the week. We'll keep you updated, and your local Sterling on Sunday station will have more information. I'm Chief Meteorologist John Weatherby. Make sure it's a great week, gang.
And there's Jennifer Ramolini. Jennifer Ramolini. And the reason I wanted Jennifer Ramolini to share time with us is because I wanted to say her last name over and over again. Jennifer Ramolini. This is such a beautiful name you have, Jennifer.
Thank you very much.
Jennifer Ramolini is one of us. Now, you know, if you've been listening for a little while and taking notes, because it will be on the exam, at midnight, we call the show Midnight Misfits. Where the third hour of the show, it's for Midnight Misfits, because anybody listening to the radio on a Sunday night is not normal. Normal people have other things to do. They have Mai Tais, they have Sunday night television, they're very involved with Netflix, but you and I are alone in the 18-wheeler, Keith Mortensen. You and I are alone coming back from the Jersey Shore, from the Cascade Mountains. We're alone in the car, and we're different. And the first difference is we prefer to be alone. And the second difference is that we don't really fit in. And Jennifer Ramolini, as I've explained many times, I wasn't just the last kid to be picked for a team. I was not picked. The gym teacher always had to point to me when everybody else was picked and said, Sterling, you go on that team. They wouldn't even take me at the end. The gym teacher would go, you go on that team. And anybody who works in radio there's one thing in common, people who work in radio, Jennifer Romolini, and the thing in common is that if you say to somebody in radio, how was your prom? They will say, I was at the transmitter. I'm in an industry with people who have no prom stories and were C students. That's the whole industry. Normal in radio is left-handedness. That's normal. Control boards are set up for left-handedness. It's a whole industry of freaks. I'll tell you one more quick thing about radio people that you may find fascinating, Jennifer Romolini. Jennifer Romolini, is that people think that we are extroverts. If you're on the air, they think you're an extrovert. We are pure introverts in that 99% of the time when you listen to the radio, the person you're listening to is alone in a room. They're alone. When you listen to 1010 Winds, that anchor person is alone in a room running the equipment himself, herself, wow. Because we can't do it if somebody else is in the room with us. We are the opposite of a stage performer. We can't do it if anybody else is in the room with us. And it gives us the greatest cover, Jennifer. The cover is that you think we're social. We're talking to a million people. You think we're social. No, no, no. We all went into radio so that we could sit alone in a room and smoke and eat pizza and appear to be social. Now, Jennifer Romolini has a great story. She wrote a fantastic book that I had to read immediately called Weird in a World That's Not. Let me repeat that. Weird in a World That's Not. And this is what caught me. The subhead, A Career Guide for Misfits. A career guide for us. Finally, a career guide for us. And what everybody says, well, you know, I want to have a better career. I want to get ahead. I think I should be doing something different. I'm stuck in this rut job. Everybody hears that. And then everybody's told, get out of that rut. Get out of that rut. Go for it. Go for it. Jennifer was a waitress for how many years, Jennifer? How many years?
10 years.
And you were in a not abusive, but not much of a marriage for how many years?
5 years.
Would have been easier if it was abusive. You'd have your reason, but instead it was just nothing, right?
It was a lonely. It's very sad to be lonely inside of a marriage. I think that is one of the saddest things. And I was very lonely inside of that marriage because we didn't really have much to talk about, I guess.
And you were a good waitress. There were parts of being a waitress that you enjoyed. It paid well enough. It was social enough. It was enough. It was just enough. Is that a fair statement?
Oh, yeah. I was technically an excellent waitress. Absolutely. And, you know, I sort of rose through the waitressing ranks. I started out at a diner, and by the end, I was serving in a fine dining French restaurant. So I had had a career, at least there had been some growth in it.
There are a lot of Mademoiselle, Glamour Magazine, Five Ways to Get Out of a Rut articles and peppy TED Talks that are not meant for me. Something happened in your wiring that you said, enough, enough. I'm going to step out of this waitressing job. I'm going to step out of this marriage. I want to hear about the circuitry that took place in Jennifer Romolini's mind that took you to the next step of your life. Please share that.
Well, I was with my husband for a while. I was really unhappy. I felt that, you know, there was really no satisfaction in the relationship. We had married really young. I was 21 when I married him. And I was, like we just said, I was a waitress, and I had no real prospects. I had no marketable skills. I had no money in my bank account. You know, my car broke down. I really felt like I had nothing, and I felt very powerless, and I felt like I had no agency. And I thought, well, this can't be it. This can't be the end of this life. This can't be all I get. And I kind of just was sick of myself, and I was kind of embarrassed by my circumstances. And I think both of those things, maybe the shame a little bit, motivated me to see what else I could do, to see what else was out there for me. And, you know, I had no idea what it was going to be, but I just started with, well, this is not enough, and I feel embarrassed by this as a life.
And after you captured this sense of shame and embarrassment about the life that wasn't enough for you, and the reason I think your story is really important is nothing horrible happened to you. That's the best part of your story. You didn't have a terrible childhood. You didn't have horrible parent stories. You didn't grow up in poverty. You weren't abused. None of the crap that we'd hear on Jerry Springer. You were just fine, except it wasn't what Jennifer Romolini wanted. What was the first step you took to inch away from a life of virtual nothingness into, and the end of the story, by the way, about Jennifer Romolini, is she's an incredibly successful person on her terms. What was the first thing that you did to step away from 10 years of waitress, 5 years of marriage?
Well, and understand, I know that that's not very long in a marriage, by the way. I just, you know, I was young.
Oh, it's long. Jennifer, in nothingness, it's long.
The first thing I did, I guess, I think the first thing, really, not to be corny, is I imagined that there could be more. I imagined that I could be good at something, that I could apply myself, and that maybe there could be a better outcome, right? I think that just even having that openness to new things and a new possibility and not being like, oh, well, I can't go back to school because that'll cost so much money, and by the time I'm out, I'll be, you know, 35 or whatever it is. All the ways we sort of put blocks in front of ourselves because we're too afraid to try something new, because in order to try, you have to be vulnerable and you have to be honest with yourself, and you also have to make some sacrifices. And those are the reasons that change is so scary, even if ultimately it's going to be a positive change. So I think that for me, the first thing was the openness to the possibility. And then the second thing was I had to really make some sacrifices. I had to live in uncomfortable ways, and I had to really have no money, and I had, you know, I lived a fairly comfortable life with my husband. He made a pretty decent living. We lived in a nice two-bedroom apartment, et cetera. I had to, like, live with strangers and roommates when I eventually went back to college and to New York City and was starting my career. I had to do a lot of things that I think would be really unpleasant to most people sounding, but I was willing to make those sacrifices because I started to crystallize a goal. With every step, I started to crystallize a goal more and more.
This expression, creative visualization, where you visualize the goal, imagine yourself in a situation, and then it helped propel you to it. Is that right?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I'm wary of saying, like, the secret or anything like that. I'm wary of being too mystical about it, you know? I think that these things are, because then when we get into that, then we almost feel like we're powerless, right? When I think we're very empowered, and I think that a lot of this has to do with us. I mean, sure, it's luck and timing and all of that, but it's really like determination and grit and saying, okay, I'm going to do this, and now I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do whatever it takes to get from A to B.
Right, practical steps. Jennifer Romolini has written a great book for you and me called Weird in a World That's Not. A career guide for misfits. A career guide for misfits. And my phone number is 888-688-WALT if you want to talk to Jennifer Romolini. 888-688-WALT. Jennifer, like you, I have hired hundreds of people. What are the common mistakes and the common smarts when somebody sits down with an interview with an interviewer? What are some of the mistakes they make? What are some of the smart things you've seen people do in a job interview?
Well, I think one of the things is candidates are often trying to be an idea of what you think they want. I think what they think you want instead of who they really are. So they're really putting on like a persona for you. And I think a good interviewer, and I always smelled this from a mile away, I can smell that phoniness. And I'm always just trying to like find out who they really are, because so much of working well together is chemistry. And so if you're presenting this sort of false person to me in an interview and I can't get an idea of who you really are, then this isn't going to work for us long term, probably. And the second thing is people oversell their skills. You know, that whole idea of faking it until you make it. I think that overselling your skills is a mistake, because First off, it's the idea you can get caught, because if you're full of it, you're somebody might catch you. But second off, when you get hired, you're going to be expected to flex that muscle the first day. And if you don't know how to do it, then you're going to be starting off on the wrong foot with your employer, and you're going to be setting a bad precedent in the job. So I think those are two things just off the top of my head.
Now, for misfits, the question comes up about how should you dress? Because many a misfits has a purple streak in their hair and piercings.
I mean, look, it depends on your industry, right? If you're in a super conservative industry, then you should know that. Part of it, part of this being empowered and part of this being a practical process and not some, like, mumbo-jumbo is you are educating yourself. You have all the information you can possibly have before you walk into any situation, including an interview. And one of the things you should know is this industry an industry that can accept my purple streak in my hair and my piercings, or is it not? And if it's not, is it something that I'm willing to change in order to get this job, or is it not? You know, making these choices in a very active way. In terms of what you should wear, I mean, first couple of job interviews I went on, and let me say, I went on 23 job interviews before I got my first office job. And it was only by the 24th that I think I'd figured it out. And one of the things I did was I wore these very stiff pantsuits because I thought that's what business ladies wore. And I was going into a creative industry, and I looked so out of place. I looked like career Barbie, and everybody else was like in hoodies, and they just didn't want to hire me. I didn't look like a person that would fit in. And eventually I figured out, oh, I just need to dress nicely here. I just need to dress the way I would if, like, I'm going out to dinner with my grandmother, you know. Or, you know, so it really depends on what your industry is. But find something that you feel great in, you feel comfortable in, that's not going to have a wardrobe malfunction, that you can, like, awkwardly move your arms in. Those kinds of things are things I think about.
Now, what's important about Jennifer Romolini is she has put all this to work. But remember, she said it took her 28 job interviews to get the office job she wanted. She's had an incredibly successful career in digital and online businesses. She ran Shonda Rhimes. What am I saying? What's her name?
Shonda Rhimes. You got it.
Okay. Shonda Rhimes website. Oh, my gosh. Like, that's at the peak of show business. You hit the peak of show business, Jennifer. How long did you work for Shonda Rhimes?
I worked for her for a year and a half. I launched her website and got it to a place where it was growing and active and built the staff and set the voice and the design and everything. And then when I felt like, oh, you know, I've done enough here, I can walk away from this. I feel like I did what I set out to do. I walked away, and now I'm working on another book.
Well, you're a great author. The name of the book is Weird in a World That's Not, A Career Guide for Misfits. She launched Shonda Rhimes' website, and much to my amazement, it is a spectacular, useful, thank you, easy-to-navigate website. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And I have started to find stories on that website that I get to share on my radio show. Jennifer Romolini, your book, the link to the book, will be at the Walter M. Sterling Facebook page, and it'll be easy to find and easy to buy, and we'll put it on our Twitter account. And Jennifer Romolini, thank you so much for being on Sterling on Sunday.
Oh, my goodness. Thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure.
Oh, you're going to be back, so you just get used to it. You're going to be back on the show, guaranteed.
All right. Thank you.
Jennifer Romolini, Weird in a World That's Not. I'm Walter M. Sterling. Coming up, Randy West has the best gossipy stories about Hollywood. That's coming up in just seconds on Sterling on Sunday.
Happy first anniversary from me, Katy Perry. Thanks for the teenage dreams. Love, Sterling on Sunday.
And next week, I'm celebrating a full year of doing this on the network, 5 years of doing it on WPHT in Philadelphia, by doing the only sane thing possible, which is taking the week off.
If you think what you're listening to is horrible, wow, wait till next week when I'll be here. I'm Alex Bennett, substituting next week for Walter.
In every industry, there are people who developed a technique. They were the founders of an idea. Denton Cooley was the man who, in fact, developed the magic stitch that made coronary bypass surgery possible. Every doctor knows that. And in your business, there are founders. Well, Alex Bennett was one of the founders of modern spoken word radio. And he's one of my heroes, and I think you're going to have a real treat hearing a master do it. He was for years doing mornings in San Francisco. Attention, KKSF. Real Talk 910. Attention, Real Talk 910. Alex Bennett's going to be on all 3 hours next week. He's going to host the show. Everybody at SiriusXM is very nervous. But he was at SiriusXM for 10 years, and he's great. He's a great guy. He's a great host. You're going to have a lot of fun with Alex Bennett. Isn't that right, Alex?
If you think what you're listening to is horrible, wow, wait till next week when I'll be here. I'm Alex Bennett, substituting next week for Walter.
888-688-WALT, 888-688-WALT. I have a website. It's Walter M. Sterling. What does that mean? It means that at any time, you can hear one of my shows on demand. Every show has been archived there. It's been archived by Lee Harris.
I'm Lee Harris, and here's what's happening.
You know what Lee Harris said to me? Lee Harris is the morning drive anchor on the biggest radio station in New York City. And Lee Harris said, I said, why do you think? He said, well, I hope they understand at Westwood that this, they have something here. I said, what do you mean they have something? Well, you know, it's an intelligent show. Like, what?
I'm Lee Harris, and here's what's happening.
There couldn't be anything worse than somebody telling me it's an intelligent show. The whole point of this show is to be vaguely stupid, to help us get from the weekend to the weekday, from the second shift to the third shift. You're coming home from the second shift now, going to the third shift at the hospital. This is your morning. This is your morning drive, and it's great to be with you. I'm Walter M. Sterling, and I have stories for you. Plus, coming up, we have Randy West. Randy West has the best Hollywood gossip of anybody. This is Randy West.
One car! Two cars!
He was an announcer on The Price is Right and dozens of other shows. Just one of the great, great guys in Hollywood who has great stories for us. That's coming up in just seconds. Plus, oh my gosh, the actual producers and writers of our summer serial, Asbestos Falls. They're going to be with us tonight to explain that Asbestos Falls is not entirely fiction.
Walter M. Sterling
looked at radio and saw a household possession capable of enriching the lives of millions.
Join the Walter M. Sterling Club.
Live on 1210 WPHT in Philadelphia, our home radio station. I've been on WPHT almost 5 years. Jared Hart, the program director, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. David Yagaroff, thank you. It's an honor to be on 1210 WPHT, on WLS 890, WMAL FM, home of Mary Walter. I gave Mary her first job in radio. When she won the Gracie Award, did she thank me, by the way? Would somebody get back to me on that, please? Oh, I love being on the radio. I have done this now for 1 year. 1 year on Westwood One.
Hello, Walter. This is Christine Flowers, and I want to let you know that I was taught by nuns, and I wish you a happy one-year anniversary.
Walter Sterling, this is Rush Limbaugh. Let me just explain this to you, my friend. A happy one-year anniversary of Sterling on Sunday. Keep up the good work, my friend.
Hello, Walter, it's Mark Levin. Now, let me tell you, normally I would say, get off the phone, you dope. But I kind of like your show. I think it's really good. A big congratulations, Sterling, on Sunday. A one-year anniversary. Really, really great.
Hey, Walter, it's Sean Hannity. Now, let me just say this. I want to congratulate you. I know you don't like talking about politics and Hillary and her emails like we do. And don't forget Hannity, Fox News. I don't forget to set your DVR. But I just want to wish you a very, very happy one-year anniversary. And I got to turn it over to my good friend Don Imus.
You see this this show, Walter Sterling? I just call you up right now. I wish you a one-year happy anniversary, even though I think the show is as hideous. But it's 5:52 here on the Imus in the Morning program.
Hey, this is Jim Kelly, voice actor here on the Walter Sterling Show, and a happy one-year anniversary to Sterling on Sunday, where we don't talk about the normal stuff you would hear on daytime radio. We don't talk about the Democrats or the Republicans. We just talk to you. Happy anniversary, Walter.
One call.
On the first network show, we had Randy West. Randy West is an accomplished voiceover talent, announcer, gadfly, man about Hollywood, who knows all the good gossip. There's Randy West. Welcome to Sterling on Sunday on our one-year anniversary. Hi, Randy.
I could not be here, especially following all those pseudo-celebrities, you know. I'm one myself, because truth isn't truth. I have no fake news, but I do have congratulations on your anniversary.
Well, thanks. You know, it's a real miracle. And the only way it's continued for a year is that I'm on late Sunday night. Nobody notices. Most of the executives are half-crocked or sunburned from the golf course, or they were out on the Jersey Shore catching blues. They were very busy catching blues this weekend.
Really?
So it's great to
be. Were maybe, you know, catching a glimpse of Chris, whatever his name is there, you know, the new whale.
Oh, that's very funny. Chris Christie, who was a whale a year ago, he seemed to close off an entire stretch of beach, Bradley Beach in New Jersey, so that his family could enjoy the sunshine while the rest of us were kept away from the beach. It was a stunning moment of defeat.
Truly, truly, the top 1% only get to do that.
Randy West, I
have a story that I want to share.
Yes, please tell your Hollywood stories. We love Randy West Hollywood stories.
I am loaded with them, but I'm going to take one fresh and brand new. Okay, now you know, over television's history, there's been a lot of people who have risen from the ranks of sports into broadcasting and have done very well. I'm thinking maybe the best example might be Joe Garagiola for us older viewers, who was a baseball catcher, ended up doing the Today Show, as well as many other, you know, game shows and everything else. Well, we have a guy like that right now, hotter than ever. He's on television tonight with the $100,000 pyramid. His name is Michael Strahan, and defensive end, I believe, for the New York Giants. And my God, he's become a broadcaster. He was on the DIY Network. He did some Fox NFL pregames, and then suddenly he gets the job of jobs replacing Regis Philbin on Live with, you know, Regis and whomever. And then it was Kelly Ripa. And, you know, Regis walked away from that job because Disney told him he had to take a pay cut. What an insult to a guy who's been such a giant. So Michael Strahan steps in there in September 2012. Ratings go up. Emmys. He's got a $2 million job, and he just stays for a matter of, you know, a couple of years, because in April of 2016, he moves to Good Morning America at a salary that's somewhere between 3 and 4 times what he was making. However, poor Kelly Ripa, she's there, never moved, hasn't done a second show, while Strahan's got the pyramid, he's got Good Morning America, he's all over the TV. Now, it seems that Kelly Ripa is a bit put out, you know, watching her former partner sprint up and past her, you know, leaving her in the dust after she spent time and effort getting him up to speed with this long-running morning franchise. And she's been quite outspoken about how she helped, you know, make him a winner in that morning show. But backstage, she's been heard saying, you know, that Live should be his primary job and he needs to focus. Well, obviously, he's focused on a career, and either Kelly thinks it takes 23 hours to prep for a one-hour show, or, you know, this perhaps some jealousy at his career advancements. In any case, he goes from the Cindy Morning Show to the network morning show that hosted Good Morning America. She was not told. Nobody told her. She learned the same day that the public did. Now, how's that for having a guy on air with you for 3.5 years who's there making a deal behind your back, and not a word gets said? And, you know, a violation is probably how she feels, and there's some right, you know, righteousness behind that. So Michael, this season, right now, invited Kelly Ripa to, you know, break the ice and be a celebrity player on his pyramid, $100,000 pyramid, which you need to know, it's not just some wacky, stupid summer game show. The thing is often among the top 10 shows of the week. So it's a huge hit, and I would think that Kelly would want to go on. And while her people say that, oh, she graciously accepts the invitation, she'd love to be with you on that show, you know what? The show keeps calling, and her people keep doing the Hollywood shuffle. It's gone, an entire season of taping has come and gone without her because, well, her people say that the schedules just didn't mesh. So apparently this, what can you say? This is all glamour and loveliness in Hollywood or New York.
Randy West is an expert on Hollywood. He's steeped in Hollywood lore. Randy knows everybody. He's the best contact you and I could possibly have in Hollywood. I'm shocked that he agrees to speak to us. Randy, what could Kelly Ripa get paid? What do you figure she's paid?
Oh, south of $5 million, where, you know, which is, you know, a lovely neighborhood. I'd like to be, you know, north or south of that. But, you know, on Good Morning America, the numbers approach, you know, $10 million for Michael Strahan.
And what do you figure Ryan Seacrest, her annoying co-host, gets paid?
It's indeterminate. He's got an executive producership on the show. He comes with, you know, the legacy of you know, being the go-to guy. As I understand it, he flies across the country between American Idol and then on Sunday nights and arriving there Monday all, you know, hungover, I assume, just from the jet lag. But what must he make? North of $30 million a year, certainly. I'm just going by established numbers like now, that we do Randy, know for some people.
Randy West is also an aficionado on game shows. You love game shows, don't you?
I do. They've made me what I am today. They're going to pay my pension into perpetuity.
Now, my question for you is, you mentioned about Kelly Ripa not going on Michael Strahan's game show.
Right.
I'm obsessed with Alec Baldwin's Match Game because they're pretty close. And they do a pretty good job on that, but I keep waiting to see Tina Fey on Match Game. Is there animosity between Alec and Tina?
That's a great question. I'm not aware of anything like that, but I'll tell you what's interesting about Alec Baldwin and the Match Game, where ABC has renewed Pyramid for next summer. I mean, that's unheard of. And has also renewed this far in advance the new To Tell the Truth and also the Celebrity Family Feud, in case you haven't had your fill of dick jokes from Steve Harvey. That's already been renewed into the next summer. However, they did not announce a renewal for Match Game with Alec Baldwin. How strange. Every other game
is there trouble
running.
Is there trouble with Match Game? Is there trouble with Match Game?
Is there? Well, the big trouble is the budget, because the number that you were asking about salaries before, the number rumored that Alec Baldwin demanded is $500,000 an episode. Plus, you've got six celebrities who have got to be paid more than scale. So you have a very expensive show. People think the prize money is that prize money is nothing.
That's nothing.
Nothing when you have $500,000 a week.
And then one more question.
Yeah.
I didn't mean to cut you off, but
that's
I have
good.
One more question.
I was cut off by a mile
this information.
Once.
You're the only one who has this information. Is Alec Trebek going to retire when he turns, what is it, 80?
I was sitting across from Alex Trebek this past weekend at a 90th birthday party for a producer we've all worked for, and I said to Alex, boy, you made quite a stir about you walking away from the show. As I understand it, you just signed a 2-year deal. He says, yeah, they're all talking about me leaving after those 2 years in 2020. And I said, well, you don't know how you're going to feel in 2020. He says, of course not. It's a 50-50. I don't know how I'll feel. But they latched on to that 50% and have run with it. So it's made all the headlines. He has no intention of leaving in 2020 any more than Pat Sajak has left every time they back up a truck full of money and dump it into this for 30 days of work a year. I mean, you know, what are you going to do? You're going to say no to millions? And I doubt he will, even though he says it's 50-50. Alex will not be leaving in 2020. That's my word.
Randy West, you are fantastic. I hope you come on my show more. Thank you so much for being on our anniversary show. And thank you for making the first show fantastic. That's Randy West, expert on Hollywood. He has all the gossip. TMZ knows nothing compared to Randy West. Coming up in just seconds, Florida stories. Sterling on Sunday. It started innocently enough. It started with the Watusi.
Let's welcome the KCTU dancers as they perform the award-winning, gold disc-winning song, Watusi.
See, I was looking for oldies for some reason on YouTube, and I saw the Watusi, not one of my favorite songs. I saw the Watusi, and there's those little freeze frames that they show people dancing, and usually it's in black and white from Dick Clark's American Bandstand and from 1958. But instead, this was a group of kids dancing that were modern wearing current clothes in color, sort of color change. And I looked at it, I'm watching it, and it was shot in what, 2011, 2014? When was it shot, James?
It would have been 2013.
And I'm watching it, and I'm like, it was called the Low Budget Late Night Show out of Manhattan, Kansas. Now, as you know, either the things that come out of Manhattan, Kansas are either incredibly cutting edge or just unbelievably boring. And I'm watching this, and I'm like, huh, this is interesting. It turns out that on a regular basis, this low-powered television station having something to do with Kansas State University was making a show called the Low Budget Late Night Show, hosted by this kid named Caleb. And one of the regular segments was they had the dancers. They had the dancers on this television station, and they were all kids who went to Kansas State. And I'm watching it, and I'm mesmerized. And now, by the way, it's up to 741,000 views of kids dancing the Watusi in the 2000s. And I'm like, who the hell put this together? Because not only were they dancing, but it was hosted. It was well hosted. It had bits. It was production. Somebody had to get a lot of kids to do something that they wouldn't normally naturally do or want their parents to know about. And I studied who did it. And it turns out to be a guy named James Copeland. I study it more, and I search James Copeland, not in a creepy way, but I'm looking for talent. I'm always fascinated by talent. You're listening to the guy who said, you know, Dr. Ruth, I think you should do a radio show. And at the time, she was a professor at City College in New York. She had never been on the air in her life. I put Dr. Ruth Westheimer on the radio for the first time in her life for 15 minutes a week on a Sunday night. I paid her ready, union scale, $18 a show. After a year, she was represented by William Morris on the cover of People and Volta Ivanta Seville. Ivanta Seville. Dr. Ruth, you can have a Seville. I have some experience at identifying talent since I have to compensate for the fact that I have none. James Copeland, turns out, is the program director of KSDB, Kansas State's radio station in Manhattan, Kansas. And I am very happy that James is with us tonight, along with his cohort, Zach St. Clair. Welcome, welcome, welcome.
Hello, hello.
Thank you, Walter. It's a privilege to be on.
A couple months ago, I said, you guys aren't doing enough in the summer. Why don't you make a serial, serialized drama? I was appalled and disgusted that public radio made something called The Serial 3 years ago, and everybody was very excited. I'm like, we're commercial radio. We invented serialized drama on the radio. We're very good at this. And I've been looking for some way to do better. I said to James Copeland and his buddies, why don't you make a serialized drama for the summer? And they said, sure. And I said, do whatever you want. Just be sure that you scare me. And that's what they've done. It's called Asbestos Falls. Asbestos Falls. And each week we've ran an episode. Tonight we're going to run the final episode of Asbestos Falls. And what I don't understand is, why do you still send it in on cassette?
Well, Walter, I'm pretty old school. So as anyone who's worked with me can attest, I like all the old technology, so if I'm given an opportunity to work on a Gates board from the 60s or trying to get an IP codec working, I'm always going to choose the Gates board. So I'm very old school. I like resurrecting old technology. The other day, I just got a cart tape on the air. I got a cart deck to where we now play cart tapes on KSDB. And I don't know of any other radio station that's even doing that anymore, so I like the old school.
And it's not even, there's the people that are like, oh, I'm an old soul, like, I've listened to big bands before. James Copeland's house is mostly made of typewriters, they're just scattered around. It's a interesting kind of hobby.
Well, Zach and James at KSDB in Manhattan, Kansas, based on what you've just described, do girls talk to you at all?
We certainly hope not.
We had to struggle to find them for this episode. There are a few females in the actual production itself, but
some frantic late phone calls hey, can you lend your voice for a podcast?
We realized over the summer that there were no women in town at the station. There are a few that work here, but there was no one in town. So it was a real conundrum, but we do our best.
But we scrounged up some folks.
And have they admitted knowing you?
I think that's the next stage. Hopefully this this whole serial thing can help us bridge that gap.
That's right.
Fingers crossed we'll get there.
James Copeland and Zach Sinclair, did either of you go to the prom?
I went to one. I did go to one. But now these days I do spend my time in a small booth, you know, with 1970s shag carpeting. And acoustic walls. That's the place I spend my time now. Of course,
I'll say I went to a solid 4 proms for 4 years of high school. So
Well, radio, as I like to say, is an industry of C students with no prom stories. What I'd like to know is Asbestos Falls. We always have new affiliates like KUFO in Portland, Oregon, and KKSF in San Francisco. Sum up the story plot line, if it can be dignified with the phrase plot line, about Asbestos Falls. And then I'm going to ask you, is it based on any reality? So first, summarize the serial Asbestos Falls. And remember, coming up, we're going to play the final episode tonight. Sum up what's happened in Asbestos Falls.
Yeah, absolutely. So I've always been interested in radio and it being involved in the community. So I thought, well, here's a radio station that's based in this Victorian house, and these DJs, everyone who works at the station, lives in the same house that they work at. And because we basically live here, so that's kind of, you know, how part of it came to be. So here in Asbestos Falls, there's all sorts of weird things that happen, and it's all normal. So you have a potato queen who walks around the city, and that's absolutely just normal. And so we're reporters, and we report on what is going on in the town of Asbestos Falls and just present it, you know, like it's normal everyday life. And so we just talk about everything that's going on, but then everything gets turned upside down when something called MDAS moves in. It's a government research laboratory. They move in, and the town kind of turns upside down more than normal.
Yeah,
so,
it turns the spooky a little bit spookier.
That's right. So we get some local geriatrics involved called the Crafty Seniors, an eco-terrorism arson group who also sell baked goods and crafts and that sort of thing.
The usual.
And so we get them involved and try to take down MDAS, and that's kind of where we're at here with this episode.
How much of Asbestos Falls is based on the reality of Manhattan, Kansas? And I realize you're risking your life when you answer that question.
At risk of our mortal selves, I'd say a decent amount. The intention with it from the beginning was definitely kind of a highlighting of the absurdity of small towns. I know I've grown up in different small towns. Most of my life was spent, the biggest town is about 6,000 population, and James is probably pretty similar. And so we always just been around all these things, and they're so absurd. We have like troubles with the newspaper in town, or we have troubles with whatever random people come to City Hall meetings and just rant for things for a while. And we're like, how can we take this, flip it on its head, and make it into something exciting? And that's a lot of what it's all based on.
And the other part of it is the idea of MDAS, which is actually real. It's called NBAF. It's the National Bio and Agro Defense Facility. They're moving it to Manhattan, Kansas. It's currently in Plum Island in New York. And they're moving this facility that deals, they have all sorts of different pathogens or, you know, diseases that are normally in animals, some of the which can transfer over to humans. And it's going to be literally in our backyard here. So, you know, as that all happens, we kind of examine it through the lens of Asbestos Falls and see, you know, kind of fun conspiracy theories like, for instance, the dam here, Tuttle Creek Dam. It is supposedly built on a fault line, and a few years ago, what they did is they put new structure in it so that it wouldn't collapse, and they put in these dam failure sirens and all this jazz. And our theory, at least, is that that's been passed around town is that if something happens at MBAF, then they can blow this whole dam up and flood the town and flood all of Manhattan, and then they will flush the pathogens or diseases or whatever away. They'll have the Fort Riley soldiers come out. They'll block the roads and everything. And so that's kind of the conspiracy theory that we have. And even the Crafty Seniors, they actually do sell crafts in the mall.
Yeah, it's a nice little conspiracy spark, which kind of led Asbestos Falls into being.
James Copeland, Zach St. Clair, our executives, talent, producers, writers at KSDB in Manhattan, Kansas, which is part of Kansas State University. And they have been spouting terrifying things just now, just terrifying things. What was the name of that company that's moving from Plum Island to Manhattan, Kansas? What's the description you used again?
It's actually the National Bio and Agro Defense
Facility. There you
go,
the National Bio and Agro Defense. Can you imagine that business card? That business card alone is terrifying. One final question for James Copeland, please, and for Zach St. Clair, which is this. Would you be willing to accept another challenge, the way you embrace the challenge of creating asbestos falls?
Ooh, of course. We're accepting live on air.
Yes, you're accepting live on air, and you could win a prize announcement. Here's my question. Ooh. Yes, here's my question. Personally, I think that spoken word radio ran out of steam 10 years ago and needs to be completely revitalized. Production needs to be changed. The structure needs to be changed. Would you be willing to accept this challenge? Because I am dumb enough to just go ahead and put it on the air.
Let's do it.
All right. Yeah, coming up in just seconds from James Copeland and Zach St. Clair at KSDB in Manhattan, Kansas, the final episode of our summer serial, Asbestos Falls, Sterling on Sunday.
I'm James Kearney.
And I'm Zach Gimble.
And it's time for the annual Asbestos Falls Potato Pageant. How are we here? How did we make our grand escape from the evil clutches of MDAS? Well, we'll tell you about that later. I mean, probably. But for the time being, we are moored in the safety of our KEXT Zeppelin above the Asbestos Creek Dam Spillway Park, the site of this evening's festivities.
Oh, and here they come, folks. The contestants have arrived in a cattle truck courtesy of McGregor Trucking Company, and boy, what a view from here. Dozens of walking potatoes are pouring forth from the truck towards the stage.
Of course, not real potatoes, but rather contestants dressed like potatoes. And as always, whoever still most resembles a potato by the end of the night wins the competition.
Judging tonight's contest is none other than last year's Potato Queen. Does she have a name?
Well, all we do know is that she is over 30 feet tall.
Why have we never questioned this before?
And now the crowd is joining together for the opening potato ceremony song.
Uh-oh, it looks like the Potato Queen is getting angry.
Enough of this nonsense. No one will ever unseat me. I am the Potato Queen.
What's that noise?
Oh, no. This can't be happening now. The damn failure sirens.
Are we sure that's not the potato shortage sirens at Pimpworth Grocery?
Look, over there.
It's Theodosia Margaretti in a helicopter.
So you thought you could stop me with the potato old people? Don't worry, I'm coming for you and your blimp, but first I'll destroy this town and everything in it.
Patch in the loudspeaker.
I'm working on it. Okay.
Why are you doing this? Did the monster escape? What's going on?
How did you know about that? Oh, whatever. It's right there.
The Potato Queen?
Yes, the Potato Queen.
Oh, she's harmless. She's been in existence for centuries. Why have we not questioned that until now?
Well, something happened, because she's pretty mad now.
Mine!
It's too late for your dumpy little town. It's time for you all to drown. Where did all these characters come from? Ah! My eyes! Why do they always go for the eyes?
Ladies and gentlemen, the Asbestos Falls Dam just exploded. Water is rushing into the park and sweeping everything away. Oh, the humanity!
The MDAS helicopter is spinning out of control. It's heading right for the Potato Queen.
Mashed potatoes.
The Potato Queen is dead.
And look, she's blocked the river. She's diverting the water away from the town.
This could save Asbestos Falls.
Our town has changed a lot over the past couple of weeks.
MDAS took a lot from Asbestos Falls. Our air conditioners, our mall, our reservoir, and our mediocre grocery store. Not to mention several area lives. However, it could have been much worse.
Theodosia Margaretti was taken out in the timely demise of the Potato Queen, whose fantastic starchy girth saved much of the town from flooding.
Despite this, KEXT would have been destroyed had it not been for John Dickinson and his followers, who ironically did not get our note we tried to deliver when we were stuck in MDAS.
That's right, I was merely fulfilling a prophecy that included making a wall of sandbags and tires around this geographical location. I inherited this message from an egg roll I was enjoying while flossing for carrots.
Thank you, John. We appreciate it.
The floodwaters destroyed MDAS and flushed most of the facility into the chasm beneath, presumably destroying the air conditioners below.
As for the Potato Queen, area scientists determined that the arbitrary pathogens leaking out of MDAS may have caused her to go crazy. This hasn't stopped locals from helping themselves to her ample flesh, however.
A lot of people will be eating mashed potatoes for a long time.
And with that, Asbestos Falls returned to the quaint chaos of a town like any other dot on the map of small town America.
That's produced by James Copeland, Zach St. Clair, and the team at KSDB, Kansas State University's radio station in beautiful Manhattan, Kansas. Asbestos Falls. Midnight Misfits is the name of my podcast, because, you know, you better do a podcast. Being on 50,000-watt radio stations, that's not enough. And tomorrow we'll post all 12 episodes of Asbestos Falls in case you missed any of that or didn't understand most of it.
Hey, everybody, I'm the originator. I'm Alex Bennett. Yes, and most of the people out there, well, some of them, well, a few, are copying what I've been doing for years and years and years. You can find out what that is next Sunday when I guest star for Walter.
All right, I'm going to take next week off. That's how I'm going to celebrate 1 year. You think, how does a guy who works 3 hours a day, 3 hours a week, need time off? Well, it's because I obsess about this show all week. And then on Friday and Saturday, all I do is worry about all of the secret little elements. And then I obsess about the fact that we have a technical nightmare most weeks, but not this week. I am live in the laundry room, and coming up in seconds, you and I are going to talk about Ashley Benson and Cara Delevingne's love with an official lesbian, Sterling on Sunday.
Join the Walter M. Sterling Club.
Walter Sterling, congratulations from all of us in One Direction. You're as hot as we are. Sterling on Sunday.
Start with a clean dry brush and clean white. And go back to this light area and begin blending outward.
The CBS Radio Workshop.
Lesbians in space.
Oh, probably like sports.
Okay, if you're a lesbian, you put the hat on backwards. If you're bi, put it sideways. And if you're straight, you wear it the right way. And then if you're not wearing a hat, you're asexual. It's really simple.
Wow.
Really? So if you're not wearing a hat, they're like, nope, they're off the market. They do not even want to.
Or maybe you're like
they don't want
in
me.
A relationship if you don't have a hat.
Oh, that's good
like
too.
Like a hat, you're available.
Asexual or you are
unavailable.
Just unavailable.
The CBS Radio Workshop.
Lesbians in space.
Oh, probably like sports.
All right, there's Lily the Lesbian, and I have a big question for you. Cara Delevingne is a supermodel, and her last girlfriend was Paris Jackson, Michael's sort of daughter. And she's had a long string of incredibly attractive women, and she's a notorious supermodel and lesbian and actress. And now she's dating Ashley Benson. Ashley Benson was a star of Pretty Little Liars. And Ashley has been with guys, mostly, like, exclusively. Exactly how does Cara Delevingne get to be the biggest stud in Hollywood? How does she turn a girl who was straight till now to the dark arts of lesbianism? How does that happen?
Clearly she read my book. It's not that hard, dude. We've had this conversation, like, every Sunday. Women are sick of men and the way they're behaving. It's really not that hard. And come on, she's a supermodel. She's a movie star. I'm pretty sure she's not broke. Let's go with all those, you know, all the above. I mean, come on, how does Leonardo DiCaprio get some of the girls he gets? He's not all that.
That I don't understand. That one I don't understand.
The guy's like 5'3" and not that great looking. He's never with that as a supermodel. Come on. It's money, dude. Part of it's money, but, you know, part of it is, like I say in the book, guys have got to learn a few tricks. They've got to get it together. They're not acting now, the way they should.
Yeah, and, you know, we can talk about it every weekend. We'll never get tired, Lil. What's the name of your book?
Why Your Women Are Leaving You For Me and How to Get Them Back. And remember, they're leaving them for people like this young lady who's a supermodel. So there you go. She has got herself a toaster oven. Ta-da!
Thank you very much for being on Sterling on Sunday. That's our buddy Lil, who is a great author. She wrote a terrific book that I hope you get to enjoy so you don't lose your wife. 888-688-WALT, 888-688-WALT. I'm live on a Sunday night or Monday afternoon in Guam. We're on a radio station called The Point in Guam, and for some reason, that gives me the greatest satisfaction of anything, that we're on The Point in Guam. I think it's pretty amazing. 888-688-WALT. There's Gary Arnell. Gary Arnell is a great talk show host. Should be working full-time. Welcome, Gary Arnell. Welcome. Do you have a story, Walter, for us tonight?
Well, first of all, let me preface by saying the one-year anniversary is not surprising, but absolutely...
Walter Sterling, congratulations from all of us in One Direction. You're as hot as we are. Sterling on Sunday.
Isn't that nice of One Direction to give us Harry Styles to give us that message?
I heard that a little while ago, and that was absolutely astounding. And, you know, Walter, you've revitalized the talk radio genre, and it really is incredible in that what you're doing is you're bringing back, and I say this not in a gratuitous way, yes, I do. I think that you're bringing back the intrinsic entertainment value where all of this started. And we can go through these debates and the rhetoric and the discourse and, ooh, if we stick with bashing the liberals and the progressives, might that shore us up a point two in the ratings? But the future is people really just want a conversation. And they want to be able to have a discussion on what happened in their lives that day, how it relates to Washington, D.C., how it relates to the interpersonal in their own family. And there's just not a lot of that going on right now. And I think that that's what the beauty of this program is. And so I'm so thankful to you as a member of this talk radio community to reinvigorate what this business or what this genre was at the very beginning.
Happy first anniversary from me,
yeah.
Katy Perry. Thanks for the teenage dreams. Love, Sterling on Sunday.
Gary, do you have a story for us?
I do have a story. I'm going to get to that right now because I know we're running the clock here. So there's Dateline is Lumberton, North Carolina. The Lumberton, North Carolina School District is now going to end spanking in school as a form of corporal punishment. It was one of two school systems in North Carolina that continued paddling students as part of disciplinary policy. It was in place. This is just incredible. Since 1989, four schools in the district used spanking. School officials say the district reported 28 paddling incidents last year. I mean, I could go on with the negatives about negative ramifications concerning paddling, destroying mental health, confidence in kids. It halts effective communication. Here's the part of this that really got to me, Walter. They interviewed teachers. Prospect Elementary School Parent Teacher Organization President Eric Freeman said at a board meeting this week that the organization polled parents and 100 asked that the policy not be changed. None in that focus group voted to stop the spanking. My question is, first of all, I was only hit as a kid one time. I was in my grandmother and grandfather's bodega, the forerunner to 7-Eleven. Somebody comes into the store, and I say to my grandmother, Gert, I don't like the way that guy looks. And she's thinking profit and the motive. And she comes over and puts one across my face and said, you never say that. And I run upstairs to my grandfather, who's taking a nap as he did in the middle of the day. And I said, Grandma, just hit me. And he said, why? And I said, because somebody came in his store and I said, I didn't like the way they looked. And he said, good, you deserved it. And the deal is, Walter, I have two daughters. I never, ever, ever, ever used a physical swat on the tush in order to communicate a message that I was unhappy about something. I think there is a better way. Well, the kids are too little. They can't understand. It's the only thing they understand is the little swat on the behind.
No.
Balder,
no.
Dash. It's child abuse.
It is child abuse. And what gets me about the story of the North Carolina school districts that are deciding to ban it all of a sudden is two things. One, what year is this? It's 1880? 1980? What year is this? In 2018, this was still on the books.
Right.
This was
right.
Okay. I went to a school district in New Jersey 4,000 years ago where absolutely was not allowed. That was not going to be happening. Mm-hmm. And then the other part is that parents could opt out. It was possible in North Carolina for parents to opt out and say, you can't do
right.
that. Let's just
right.
think that through a second. Wait, let's just think that through. Let's say your parents didn't opt out and you got whacked. That triples the mental psychological effect because mm-hmm. not only did this teacher whack me, but my parents did not protect me and they could.
That's right.
So it's a very serious mess. Now, this brings up three subjects that I'd like to talk with you about, which is school. School starts for my kids this week. It starts for many kids this week or right mm-hmm. after Labor Day. Here are
right.
the three things that I'd like to share with you. And my number is 888-688-WALT. I am live. Nothing else is live. Everybody, all the music stations, that was tracked on Thursday. Now all those people are drunk at Ruby Tuesdays. I am live. This is not the Mutual Fun Show, which was recorded a month ago on a phone. This is live radio. And it's great to be with you. And the name of the show is Sterling on Sunday. And all the grown-ups are in bed. So I got to tell you my stories, and you get to tell me yours. Here's the deal. Over and over again, I visit my kids' schools. I have a 6-year-old, a 13-year-old, and a 15-year-old. And on the first day of school or on homecoming or visitation where they go into the public schools, I'll be sitting there with other parents. And you know what they all say? Oh, wow, it hasn't changed. It looks just like the classrooms I was in. I'm like, it shouldn't look anything like the classrooms you were in the last century. It should look completely different. Number one, all the public schools are way, way behind everywhere, every country, every city, everywhere. Number two, every week, starting in Memorial Day, we hear about a kid who was cooked in a car. Every week we hear about a kid who was cooked and murdered by their parents leaving them in a car. It's murder. Meanwhile, there are classrooms throughout America that are 90 degrees. They're 90 degrees in September. They're 90 degrees in May and June. Why is it okay for a kid to sit in a 90-degree classroom where they cannot concentrate, they cannot learn, the teachers cannot teach, but it's not okay for me to leave a kid in a 90-degree car? I'm confused about this. I don't know why every bar in every city is air-conditioned. The worse the bar, the better the air conditioning. Your feet stick to the floor of the bar. That's the best air conditioning.
Well, I'll tell you why don't they... Yeah, go ahead.
It should be federal law that to get federal
right.
funding for public schools, they must be air conditioned. And the third thing is, I can't even have the conversation about spanking a kid. What whack job would think that outside of Kmart with a stranger's kid, is it okay to whack a kid? In public school, I don't get it. Those are my three things. How is it possible that schools are the same? How is it possible that they aren't air conditioned? And how is it possible? Oh, and one more thing. There should be no homework. There should be no homework until eighth grade. Giving kids elementary school homework, you're telling me you can't teach fourth grade math in 6 hours a day, here's my number. It's 888-688-WALT. Usually, I love these conversations because, one, this is in fact what you and I worry about with our children. These things are what you and I worry about. I don't know why the hell I never hear it on Ellen or on the radio, because these are the things that I care about. This is my news. 888-688-WALT, 888-688-9258, live on a Sunday night, Sterling on Sunday. School year's about to start. That's what we talk about at the beginning of the school year, is school. And there are three observations I've got. Number one, I can't believe that North Carolina, there are counties in North Carolina, that just yesterday voted to end spanking. How is that possible? Number two, it should be a federal law that every room should be air-conditioned. There should be no such thing as a school classroom that's not air-conditioned. And finally, there should be absolutely no homework until eighth grade. No homework until eighth grade. My number is 888-688-WALT. Gary Arnell has joined the conversation. He brought us the amazing story that spanking is just now outlawed in 2018 in some counties in North Carolina. You had some more very important points there, Gary.
Well, Walter, first of all, as a parent of two young children, I cannot begin to even comprehend. First of all, I think spanking is horrible, and so too does the American Academy of Pediatrics. They say that it's related to the education level. You know what? A lot of parents are not going to like this. This is risky business here. But according to, not Gary Arnell, but to the American Academy of Pediatrics, spanking and the use of it is also related to the education level of the parent. The more educated, the less likely they are to spank. Arnell, what are you kidding me? We in the middle community don't understand, because we don't have a master's degree, how to discipline our children. I'm just giving you a statistic. That's all that I'm telling you. But how parents could allow a school to make a decision on this is absolutely incredible. I mean, it makes the kid feel powerless. It breaks that sense of security and trust. And I'm not going to get down a whole litany of things. I just think it's absurd. And when I see somebody in a supermarket, Walter, in a produce aisle, and the kid goes to touch an apple or something, and three of them fall on the floor, and the mother grabs the kid by the arm and says, "Get over here." I'm like with inner conflict. I don't know what to do.
You don't know what to do? You don't know what to do? I'll tell you what I do.
What do I do?
If I see a parent physically abusing a child in a public place, and this works every time,
go ahead.
I walk up to them and I stare at them. I freaking stare at them. I stare at them till they just calm down or get out. I've never had to say anything. I've never had to go beyond that. But once they know they're being watched, they become aware of how wrong it is. They know it's wrong. They're out of control. They shouldn't be allowed to parent. But that's what I do. Gary, thank you so much for being on Sterling on Sunday. Thank you for this incredible story. It really is amazing. Take it easy, okay? 888-688-WALT. These are the three things that I'm facing this week. School is starting. And again, I find that the classrooms are not air-conditioned, and this is a nice neighborhood. Why is it possible for public schools today to not be air-conditioned? 56% of the classrooms in America are not air-conditioned. Well, it's only September and June. Okay, that's 8 weeks. And always the hypocrisy in every one of those schools throughout my life that I've noticed is the principal's office is air-conditioned, the administration office is air-conditioned, the computer room is air-conditioned. Why is it possible that to this day air-conditioning is not standard in every classroom? I don't get it. Well, it's very expensive. Let me help you. Walmart, Target, Sears. If you went to one of them and said, "Would you please install window air conditioners in each of our classrooms? We will put a plaque outside the classroom, the school. We'll put a plaque outside the school that says, 'School air-conditioned by Walmart. Thank you.'" Walmart would be there. Target would be there. Sears would be there. They'd be happy to air condition the schools. Now that the Now that you can get window air conditioners from China that cost $125, those cost Walmart $20. They'd be honored to do it. And then how the hell can you have homework before eighth grade? Mystery to me. I went to a public school, a good public school, where there was no homework allowed from kindergarten to sixth grade. That principal was a tough principal, but he said, I believe in unstructured play. There should be no homework. How the hell can't you teach fourth grade math in 6 hours a day? I believe the more homework there is, the worse the teacher. You want to know if a teacher's good or bad? Good teachers don't need to give homework. They can get it done in the classroom. 888-688-WALT. This is our Midnight Misfit time. Midnight Misfits, welcome. Welcome Robert Goff, Frankie Reds, Lee Herman, Karen and Mr. Sneakers, Neil Paul, Judy Anderson, Diane Strandberg, Charles King, Charles Green, Charlie Green, how's your kid? Jason Harvey, Jay Jones, James Bronson, and Leonard Lyon. If you want to get your Midnight Misfit card so you can decipher the code I'm about to give you, go to WalterMSterling.com. WalterMSterling.com. Click Midnight Misfits and download and print out your decoder card. Secret message Walter. Coming up. Sterling on Sunday. Walter M. Sterling. Have all the grown-ups gone to bed? Good. Then you get to tell me your stories and I get to tell you mine. Welcome to Sterling on Sunday. This is our one-year anniversary on the network. Very big deal to some. Judy in Texas, welcome to Sterling on Sunday. Are we Facebook friends, Judy? Is this my Facebook friend?
Yes, it is.
Judy and I are Facebook friends, and I encouraged her to call in, and I'm so glad that you called in, Judy. Thank you for calling in. How do you feel about
it? I'm glad you remember.
Oh, you told me very funny jokes, Judy. You told me funny jokes.
Yes, I did, but you know what? Today I wanted to tell you, whenever I was in junior high, there were certain teachers that were like designated to give links or, to give paddlings. And are you there?
I am listening
Hello?
To you, Judy. Judy, I want to hear your story. I am listening to you. You bet.
Oh, okay. Well, anyway, it was like a badge of honor because there would be a line outside the door, and the teacher would have a wooden paddle, and everyone that got licks or whatever got to sign it, like a badge of honor. And that was like, he had this paddle with all these signatures on it. And they thought it was so cool to have your center on it, And I don't understand that.
So you don't think that it was some big? You don't think it was some bad thing?
Do what? I think it was a bad thing, but they didn't. Everyone who had their name on there was.
Was your name on there, Judy? Was your name on there? Was your name on there?
No. No, it was not.
Hey, Judy, listen to
what?
Me. I'm really proud of you for calling in, and I appreciate you calling in. And I know what it means that you called in, and thank you very much for calling Sterling on Sunday. And let's stay in touch on Facebook, okay? Very important. I have a six-year-old who has apraxia. Apraxia means severe speech delay. And people who overcome their speech delays and their speech problems, they are heroes to me. Leonard in St. Louis, listening on KMOX, welcome to Sterling on Sunday. Hi.
This is Leonard. I'm calling from St. Louis, Missouri. When I was in grade school, I went to Catholic grade schools. The only people I've ever been around were Catholics. I was around people of other races and other nationalities, but one religion. And I really didn't want to go to a public high school. And when my parents were buying this new home, they decided to send me to a public school because they didn't know how they would pay on the loan and be able to send me to a private school. So they sent me to a public school. Not all the kids were evil, like the priests and nuns used to say, but there were some, when we were in shop class, there was one, we were starting a new project, and the guy didn't even use the call a teacher by his title. He called him by his name. Plus, he didn't even have the proper English. Instead of saying, Mr. Blakely, what are you doing? He says, Blakely, what is you doing? And then there were, we had some principals with the title doctor behind their name. And anytime the principal would talk to me, I would say, yes, doctor, no, doctor. I didn't think it was proper to say yes, sir, or no, sir. Now, there were some kids that when he talked to them, they were saying yes, sir, and that. Because when we were in the Catholic grade schools, we didn't say to the sisters, yes, ma'am, or
well,
we said
Leonard,
yes, sister,
Leonard,
no,
did the nuns whack you, Leonard?
No, but they did give us a whipping a lot of times, too.
Well, that's whacking. They whacked you. They whipped you with a whip?
No, not with a whip or anything, like a ruler or something.
And what did that do to your brain?
Nothing. And then a lot.
888-688-WALT. 888-688-WALT. Dave in Chicago listening on WLS. Welcome to Sterling on Sunday. Did Dave go? What happened? Oh, wow. They all ran away. Well, I want to talk to you. Here's how I feel. School is starting, and here's the deal. One, if a school is getting federal funding, it should be air-conditioned. It should be a law that it's air-conditioned. Number two, I can't believe the North Carolina counties just this week said that it's illegal to spank. Are you nuts? This is 2018? That should have stopped 100 years ago. It should have never started. And number three, there should be no homework. There should be no homework before eighth grade. I don't get this. You can't teach fourth grade math in 6 hours a day. To me, the more homework you got, the worse your teacher is. Monique in Wichita Falls, welcome to Sterling on Sunday at 888-688-WALT.
Hello?
That's 888-688-9258. Hi, Monique.
Hi, how are you?
Monique, I feel very close and intimate with you, so I feel much better.
Okay. Well, I was calling about your caller that has something to say about the people who whip their kids. Well, I grew up in one of them schools, and I see not an issue with that because it was y'all should see how these kids act today in school. Like, if these kids could get them whoopings that we got back then, they'd probably be a whole lot better. I'm sure that caller don't spend much time in public schools, but I feel so bad for these teachers these days, what they have to go through. It's pitiful. Like, I had a teacher in middle school named Miss Saperstein, a little old white lady. And she had, this class was so bad. I mean, one day it got so out of control that this one little black kid had threw a paper plane by her face, and it gave her a paper cut in the eye. And that was crazy. And, like, I know y'all, I guess y'all don't believe in giving kids spankings or whatever, but spankings really do some justice.
No,
like,
Monique, he
said that the guy said that it was, that he had a study where it said that that well-to-do people, I guess, don't spank their kids, and I guess their kids, well, of course they don't spank their kids. You know why? Because they ain't got time to be around their kids. They got nannies and stuff. Us regular folks, we don't have nannies. So, of course,
we don't have nannies. And you're right, Monique. Thank you very much for your call. The Sterling Express, I'm only on the air 3 hours a week. During the week, I still see stories that intrigue me and annoy me. And I want to talk to them about them with somebody. When you call in, please let us know if you'd like me to call you during the week. And I'm going to ask you two things when I call you, besides I'll share the stories that we're talking about. Number one is I'm going to ask you, you got any good recipes? Are there any Midnight Misfit special recipes we need to know about? Because I've been making these calls. I've called every single person who wanted me to call them. And you know what? Most of them had recipes, like Peggy for stuffed zucchini. in Pennsylvania. Oh, my gosh. We'll be sharing all that on the air when I come back from vacation. And I'm going to ask you, what makes you think you're a misfit? John in Chicago listening on WLS. Welcome, John. Welcome to Sterling on Sunday at 888-688-WALT. Hi, John.
Hey, Sterling. Good evening. I grew up on the south side of Chicago in an awesome Christian Reformed community, and all my teachers went to the same church we went to on Sunday. So I could, like, really never escape them. And my mother always told me that she gave the teachers permission to discipline me. And in first grade, I was brought outside, choked by my first grade teacher up against the locker, terrified, never told my mother till I was an adult. In that same first grade, I was put in a corner, wore a dunce cap, and had to stand there for, I think I misspelled my name wrong. That's what I, like, my initials. And I know it has affected me. And it's crazy, you know, that I heard you on the radio and you brought this up. And it just, you know what I mean? It hit me because I was so young, you know.
What did your mother say? What did your mother say once you were an adult? When you told your mother this story when you were an adult, what did your mother say?
Oh, she was very upset. She was pissed, you know. And I guess I expected that, but at the same time, I knew my mother told my teachers that it was okay to punish me, but no one said how to punish me. And my mother did spank me, you know, with a belt or a spatula. Or me and my sister used to actually hide my mother's stirring spatulas.
Of course, she did.
Spatulas,
you see,
in the kitchen.
I believe that as an adult now. I believe as an adult, John, you should have the right to go back to that school and whack that teacher. I believe that's the correct response. 888-688-WALT. Greg in Virginia, welcome to Sterling on Sunday. Hi. Greg in Virginia, hello. Greg, are you with us? Greg. Hello, Greg. Do I have to call you on a ham radio? All right, 888-688-WALT. Kevin, listening on WLS in Chicago. Welcome to Sterling on Sunday. Hi.
Yes, hi, Walter. How are you?
Kevin,
thanks for taking the call.
It's exciting to be on WLS, isn't it?
It sure is. The big, yes. Big 89.
Big 80, big 890, yes, sir.
890, rather. So back in the 60s, I went to two military academies in Chicago, Bishop Porter in Oak Park, Illinois, and St. Joseph's Military Academy in LaGrange, both of which had nuns that were in charge of the education, and also from a disciplinary standpoint, we were caned, and also I had 7 stitches in my face on my left cheek because I was hit with a pointer without a rubber tip on it.
That, Kevin, would be called assault, and your parents should have taken them to the police station and had those teachers arrested. There's no reason in the world for any kid to be hit, especially no kid in school. Number one. Number two, every classroom should be air-conditioned, or they don't get federal funding. And number three, what the hell are you doing giving homework before eighth grade? These are things that mystify me. And when I go into parent-teacher nights, I've got a 6-year-old, a 13-year-old, and a 15-year-old. And what I don't understand is when I hear teachers saying, oh, I hear parents saying, oh, this looks just the way it did when we were in school. What? It shouldn't look anything like the way it did when we were in school. Lisa, welcome to Sterling on Sunday. Your phone number is 888-688-WALT. Hi, Lisa. Lisa, hello.
Oh, hello. I'm so sorry.
That's okay.
I
hi, welcome. Thanks for calling. Yeah, thanks for calling. You're in Massachusetts?
Yeah, I am in Massachusetts, in Western Massachusetts.
What are you listening to us on, do you know?
I'm listening to 1210.
Oh, you're listening in Massachusetts to Talk Radio 1210 WPHT. That's a pretty good signal there, Mr. Scalish. All right, Lisa, go ahead.
Okay, I will speak for my, you know, I actually am okay with a spanking. I was looking back and writing down my ages here. I think the things that affected me the most and what I learned from the whole time period, and I was about 4 years old to 6 years old, and my father said to me I was fibbing.
He didn't use the word lying. And I think from that point on, I learned a little bit about what shame is. And as we're talking about all of these pieces and I put it together, I got values out of that.
You got values out of being hit?
Not about, but about being spanked. I think there's a difference.
I don't think there's any difference. I think you're wrong. I don't think there's ever an opportunity for spanking that's justified. I don't think there's any situation where you can hit a kid unless you expect to be hit back. I think the minute you hit a kid, if you hit a kid, that kid has the right to hit you back in self-defense. Rich in Illinois, welcome to Sterling on Sunday at 888-688-WALT. Hi, Rich.
Hey there. When I was in school, I'm 45 years old, and when I was in school, I actually had received a few whippings from my principal, and it was public school, and I'd say probably in about third, fourth grade, they quit doing that, and then you never heard anything, and that was kind of the changing point of that. I wanted to be able to put a timeline on that for you, and I'm really not against spanking, but I think a lot of people do it in anger and frustration, and it's really not right when done that way. I think it can be done in a way where, in correction, I mean, the Bible talks about not sparing the...
I don't want to hear about the Bible. All right, there's D. Wells, Gilbert Lakes, Mark Straw, Janine Mumphrey, David Lynch, Ann Knupp. Hi, Ann. Marion Jewel Riley, my favorite name. These are my Midnight Misfits. Finally, you and I get to belong to a club. We finally belong to something. It's the Midnight Misfit Club. You can get your membership card. Go to Walter M. Sterling. Download the card. Here's your secret message for tonight. Are you ready? You'll need your decoder to decode it. Got a piece of paper? Here we go. You have to decode these numbers and letters to get your secret message, which is only deciphered on your Midnight Misfit card. The number 2, the letter L, the letter K. No, do it again. The number 2, the letter L, the letter K, the number 7, then the letter K, T, N, and finally the number 9. Decipher those from your Midnight Misfit membership card, which is free, at Walter M. Sterling. Get it right now. You want them again? One more. 2LK7KTN9. Sterling on Sunday. I post things no other host would dare post. Midnight Misfits, where you can hear the end of the story about when I had a happy ending massage. Midnight Misfits at iTunes. Midnight Misfits at iTunes. That's the name of my podcast. And every email I get, I answer walter@stacysentiretreeservice.com. walter@stacysentiretreeservice.com. Billy, welcome to Sterling on Sunday. Hi.
Well, hi, Sterling. I think you're absolutely wrong. There should be a penalty for an infraction. If the children do not perform as they should, there should be an infraction.
You hit them?
No, I'm suggesting you penalize them in one way or another, whether they stand in the corner on their toes for 5 minutes. And the other issue with the air conditioning, guess what? I grew up with no air conditioning in my house, no air conditioning in my school, and guess what? I lived through it. It's okay.
That's exactly my point. That's exactly my point, Billy. You and I are near death. The fact that you and I grew up without air conditioning in our schools, inexcusable. We also grew up without color TV. They don't make any black and white TVs anymore. We grew up without cell phones. You can't walk out of the house without a cell phone. Times have changed, kids, and in order to increase the likelihood that your kids are going to learn well and be comfortable in school and be open-minded and not worrying about it being 90-degree heat and you're passing out, it should be a law that in order to get federal funding, a public school should be air-conditioned. You and I can stay in touch all week. Walter M. Sterling is the Facebook page, and I have a podcast, Midnight Misfits, Midnight Misfits. Well, that was exciting. Next week, oh my gosh, next week, the legendary Alex Bennett. Alex Bennett will be here because I'm taking a week off.
If you think what you're listening to is horrible, wow, wait till next week when I'll be here. I'm Alex Bennett, substituting next week for Walter.
One of the founders of the format, the greatest gift you can give me is a request for help.
And my classroom should be as well air-conditioned as your favorite bar.
Next Sunday, all right? Right. Stay bright.